leader of Iran's Islamic Revolution, has praised the country's armed forces for the performance during the recent anti-Israeli operation. Israel's deadly campaign claims the lives of another 18 Palestinians in the southern Gaza city of Rafah, as a new mass grave containing the bodies of 50 people is discovered in Khan Yunis. And U.S. President signs into law a bill that extends the government's warrantless spying powers for 2 more years. Rights groups decry the move as a historic mark of shame. Thanks for joining us. The leader of Iran's Islamic Revolution has praised the armed forces for their performance during the recent incidents. In a meeting with top military commanders, Ayatollah Sadr Khamenei said the armed forces put on a display of a good image of their capabilities and power. The leader was referring to the massive missile and drone strikes on Israel after the regime's deadly attack on the Iranian embassy in Damascus. Ayatollah Khamenei said the attack was a demonstration and proof of the will of the Iranian nation and the armed forces on the international stage. The leader stressed that the armed forces should continue their work to counter enemies by using innovative approaches. The Israeli military keeps hitting the Gaza Strip with airstrikes and artillery fire, killing more civilians in the area. One of the latest attacks hit the southern city of Rafah, where the regime has been carrying out strikes almost on a daily basis. The overnight bombing killed at least 18 people, almost all of them children. Several other Palestinians were also killed in Jabalia and Nusayr refugee camps. Since October 7, over 34,000 Palestinians have been killed by Israeli attacks. Most of them are women and children. The true figure is likely much higher, as thousands remain buried under the rubble. On Saturday, the Palestinian Civil Defense said bodies of 50 Palestinians buried by Israel in a mass grave were recovered inside Nasser Hospital in Khan Yunis. Our correspondent Mutaba Musaba joined us earlier from the city of Deir al-Balah with more details on the U.S.-Israeli genocide in Gaza.
And in a continuation of the Israeli crimes, the Israeli warplanes carried out several air strikes against multiple areas of Gaza Strip, basically in Rafah City, whereas at least 15 Palestinian civilians, including 13 Palestinian children, were reportedly killed by the Israeli occupation forces after they were attacked inside their houses, which were subjected to heavy bombardments of the Israeli relentless air strikes. It's worth mentioning that Rafah City has been under heavy bombardments for roughly 2 consecutive weeks. Every day, at least 3 to 4 residential buildings being destroyed by the Israeli warplanes. This escalation actually is seen by the Palestinian people basically in Rafah City as a preload to conduct the ground offensive. Because as you know, it is known for any area to be subjected to a ground offensive to be attacked heavily by the Israeli warplanes and artillery shelling. And here in the central area of Gaza Strip, basically the northern part of Nusayrat refugee camp, it also was subjected to heavy bombardments of the Israeli airstrikes and the Israeli artillery shelling that was maintained all the night. And here in the vicinity of the Al-Aqsa Martyrs Hospital in Deir al-Balah City, it was also hit relentlessly and continuously by the Israeli artillery shelling. Massive explosions were heard over the last night here, in addition to continuous and multiple Israeli strikes that hit the vicinity of the Al-Aqsa Martyrs Hospital.
Israeli forces have shot dead 2 more Palestinians in the occupied West Bank as the regime continues its crackdown there. Killings took place at the entrance to the village of Beit Einun near the southern city of Al-Khalil. Israeli forces then stormed the village and raided several Palestinian homes. The Israeli army claims that one of the Palestinians tried to stab a soldier while the other opened fire at the regime's forces. This comes after Israeli troops killed 14 Palestinians in the Nur Shams refugee camp in a raid which began on Thursday. Since the start of its onslaught in Gaza in October, Israel has carried out near-daily raids in the West Bank. Nearly 500 Palestinians have been killed in the regime's attacks so far. Our correspondent Mona Kandil earlier joined us from Ramallah for more details on the Israeli crimes against Palestinians in the occupied West Bank.
The Israeli military declared this morning that 2 Palestinians arrived at the Beit Aynun intersection. It's northeast Al-Khalil at the entrance of the Palestinian village of Beit Aynun. One Palestinian had a gun. He opened fire at the Israeli soldiers there, and the other Palestinian had a knife, and he was running towards the Israeli forces to stab them. However, the Israeli troops at the scene immediately opened fire at the two Palestinians, and they neutralized them. This means that they opened fire, shot, and killed them. This is what the Israeli military is saying. The Israeli military is also saying that none of the Israeli forces had been wounded. The identity of those two Palestinians is still unknown. The Israeli forces have confiscated the body, and they themselves who informed the Palestinian, the two Palestinians who arrived at the Beit Aynun intersection tried to stab and to open fire at Israeli soldiers to carry out an anti-Israeli operation. They were shot and killed. However, they did not reveal about their identity. Today, Sunday, there's a general strike and a state of mourning had been declared here in the occupied West Bank to mourn the killing of at least 14 Palestinians were shot and killed by the Israeli forces in Tul Kerem, in Nur Shams refugee camp, an operation that lasted for almost 3 days since Thursday.
Tensions are running high between Lebanese resistance movement Hezbollah and Israel in southern Lebanon. On Sunday, Hezbollah said it targeted buildings used by Israeli forces in the settlement of Shumaira. A correspondent in Beirut, Mariam Saleh, was earlier with us for the details.
Now we know that they have targeted two residents that are being used by Israeli soldiers in the settlement of Shumaira. Now, Shumaira is considered by the Lebanese government a Lebanese town, the town of Tarbiha. So it is one of the seven Lebanese towns that are considered Lebanese-occupied territory. Yesterday we saw them also target another area, which is the town of Salha. We also have another operation for the resistance where they targeted espionage and technological devices in the barracks of Dubib. Seems that Hezbollah is also very much alert on when the Israelis do plant new devices, and therefore they target them. And this is also a part of the long war. This is definitely a war where you have the intelligence element and the factor of the intelligence issue very significant. And when the Israelis were blinded at the border, they needed to use other instances and devices. They also had the issue of the Merom base, they needed to use that also to get intelligence. Hezbollah made it clear that they also targeted that base as well, because they, of course, in retaliation for the heavy striking deep in the heart of Lebanon, but also to tell the Israelis that they have the ability to be able to target their devices and their basically their frequencies and all their attempts to get intelligence from Lebanon.
The Islamic Resistance in Iraq says it has carried out a fresh drone strike against Israeli positions in the occupied Syrian Golan Heights. The Iraqi movement says it struck a vital target in the occupied Heights. It said the attack was in response to the massacres committed by the Israeli regime against Palestinian civilians, including women and children. The group said that it will continue its operations against Israeli targets. In recent months, the Islamic Resistance in Iraq has conducted a series of attacks against Israeli positions. It has also hit U.S. military bases in Iraq and neighboring Syria in retaliation for Washington's support for the Israeli genocide in Gaza. The Iraqi resistance movement Hezbollah al-Nujaba has held a seminar in Baghdad. Well, the meeting comes after a deadly airstrike on a military base that belongs to resistance fighters in the Iraqi capital. We have talked to some of the participants at the seminar about the attack.
In one way or another, the Zionist regime and the U.S. are responsible for this attack. Whether it's agreed upon or not, it clearly aims to weaken our anti-terror forces by targeting the popular mobilization forces, which is a shameful act. The PMF is a national security force, and attacking such entities following our Prime Minister's visit to Washington is dishonorable.
Definitely, there's collaboration between the Zionist entity and the U.S. It's said that the attack was carried out by the Zionist army, but we know that it happened with the help of the U.S., since it has military bases in Iraq. Thus, Washington is responsible for facilitating the Israeli attack on the PMU. The U.S. plans to postpone its withdrawal from the Iraqi soil, and that is why it denies any involvement in the attack.
The goals of the attack were a bit vague for any party that seeks to respond. The U.S. denied that it had carried out any attack in Iraq, and some sources say it was carried out by international coalition forces, while some data shows that Israel is responsible. So until now, it is unclear, and thank God it was a failure for whoever was trying to target the resistance forces.
The attack was another violation of Iraqi sovereignty and airspace in a series of violations that we have witnessed, which targeted our security forces and resistance without any justification. We believe that the reason America and its allies keep targeting our resistance is that they have deep fears of our forces.
America's denial of carrying out the attack doesn't necessarily mean that it was not involved. We all know that the U.S. collaborates with the Israeli regime, which now tries to attack the resistance front in an attempt to achieve its malicious goals in the West Asia region.
The U.S. President has signed into law a bill that extends the government's warrantless spying powers for 2 years. Joe Biden signed Section 702 of the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act after it passed the Senate by 60 against 34 votes. The move was slammed by privacy advocates inside and outside Congress. They said that it allows intel agencies to spy on the communications of non-U.S. citizens, including communications on such service providers as Google. The activist group Demand Progress said the law is a dangerous tool in the hands of any president and a historic mark of shame. The Brennan Center for Justice also said that the law is shameful and is a gift to any president who would wish to spy on political enemies, journalists, and ideological opponents. Political commentator Kevin Barrett earlier told us how the extension of the Foreign Intel Surveillance Act infringes on liberties enshrined in the U.S. Constitution.
The government of the United States today, which is really an illegal and unconstitutional regime that's usurped the American Republic, has every reason to be paranoid. Because, again, they're completely illegal. They have no legitimacy. And the reason they have no legitimacy is precisely that they have overthrown the United States constitutional republic and replaced it with a kind of imperial, militarized, corporate fascist regime. The United States Constitution very clearly bans, quote-unquote, unreasonable searches and seizures. That's the Fourth Amendment of the Bill of Rights. That's always been interpreted as demanding that the authorities get a specific search warrant for any kind of surveillance of anybody in the United States before actually collecting any information. And that search warrant has to be asked for from a judge. The judge has to verify the specifics of the individual case before the government is allowed to spy. There has to be probable cause that a crime has been committed. Otherwise, the United States government, if it were a legitimate constitutional government, would not be allowed to spy on anyone without each of those specific warrants. That's the way the law has always been interpreted in the United States.
Spokesman for the Palestinian president has condemned the U.S. House approval of a bill providing $26 billion in military aid to Israel. Nabil Abu Rudaina says the new aid means more Palestinian casualties in Gaza and in the occupied territories. He said the move is a dangerous escalation and a green light for Israel to expand the war to the region. The new bill would allow the regime to upgrade its missile systems, replenish its military equipment, and acquire advanced weapons. Would also prohibit sending funds to the UN Relief and Works Agency that is considered the main source of assistance for Palestinians in Gaza. The Palestinian resistance movement Hamas denies any plans to relocate its political headquarters out of Qatar. In a statement, the movement rejected a report by the Wall Street Journal suggesting the movement is considering moving its current base in Qatar to another country in the region. Hamas said such reports indicate U.S. press agencies are complicit in this really misleading propaganda. The movement also urged the Western media outlets to take news and information regarding the movement from its official sources. Qatari officials in the past also denied reports that Doha intended to close the Hamas office due to pressure from U.S. Hamas political headquarters was established in the Qatari capital Doha in 2012. An international forum on the future of Palestine and West Asia and the ongoing shift to a multipolar world is underway in the Italian capital Rome. Hypocrisy and double standards sought by the West are among the topics discussed by experts and analysts attending the conference. Our correspondent Max Civilli has more.
A two-day international forum dubbed What Future for Palestine kicked off in Rome on Saturday. The initiative, organized by an opposition group called Front of Dissent, has been put together to tackle different topics, namely Zionism, its impact on Palestine and West Asia, the nature of Israel, what changes for the Palestinian resistance after October 7, West Asia in its transition to a multipolar world, and the risk of the Ukraine war escalating into a global conflict. The conference was attended by citizens who are very concerned about the turn the situation has taken in Western countries.
Today's forum is an important attempt to break down the wall of silence surrounding Zionist wrongdoings in West Asia. It is appalling how our mainstream media are covering Israel's brutal war in Gaza. They have created a parallel world and a parallel truth with the aim of covering up the bad things Israel is doing.
The superpowers that support Zionism are former colonial powers, most of them. And they had a role in creating Zionism in the first place. Many people allowed the Zionists to really empower themselves. So they were originally empowered by people who probably had a sense of guilt about the Holocaust, but eventually they became so powerful that they are able to control so many media outlets, they are able to control many politicians.
Speakers at the conference included former diplomats, politicians, journalists and activists from several countries, including China, the US, Britain, Russia and many others. Video links were also established with the spokesman for the worldwide anti-Zionist religious group, Neturei Karta International. Analysts at the conference are saying that the aftershocks of the Gaza crisis triggered by Israeli genocidal war are highly likely to reach far beyond West Asia and the Africa region. With the US credibility as a regional security guarantor shot to pieces, West Asia might see increased diplomatic engagement from China and Russia.
I think what's going on in Gaza is a clear sign of the total failure of the old unipolar system led by the United States. The question is if we can try to imagine that this tragedy can be turned into a change of system, a new multipolar order which also embraces that region. We have to remain confident and be aware that sometimes changes can only be obtained through fighting hard, as the Palestinians have been doing for decades.
The conference will end on Sunday with a video message by representatives of the Yemeni Ansarullah movement. Max Civilli, Rome.
When it comes to Palestine.
And that is with this edition of World News. Thanks for being with us. It's bye-bye for now.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. This is the Heart of Life Pounding. IRIB English Radio.
A Window to Palestine.
Soy Daniel Jadwe.
I am Daniel Jadwe, a citizen of Chile, originally from Palestine, born like so many other Palestinians around the world in the diaspora. Chile has one of the largest communities outside the Arab world. It is said that we are close to 300,000, but we are millions spread across the face of the earth, far from our homeland, but committed to the identity, history, and struggle of our people, of our land, which is and will forever be Palestine.
Por siempre Palestina.
Hola, bienvenidos y bienvenidas.
Hello and welcome to the program. Today we are witnessing a genocide in Palestine, but this did not start on October the 7th. It is part of a plan that was born more than 125 years ago with a perfectly studied and planned colonization process. Today we will talk about how Palestine has been changed and how the occupation has changed the life of this territory and the entire area that surrounds it. Let's analyze and have a deeper look into this issue. Indeed, more than 100 years ago, they began to arrive as victims of the pogroms of Tsarist Russia, and years later, the Nazi Holocaust. But shortly after they were received with open arms of solidarity with their pain, they began to show their true face, to expropriate the Palestinians, to destroy their villages, to destroy their ancient olive plantations, to keep absolutely everything, destroying schools and houses and any vestige of the territory's history. Let's see below the following report by our correspondent in Gaza, Hoda Hijazi.
Before the aggression on the Gaza Strip on October 7th, the Israeli cabinet had approved new plans to build thousands of homes in illegal settlements in the occupied West Bank. According to international law, the construction of these settlements is illegal and constitutes an obstacle to peace. However, this decision occurred amid an increase in violence by settlers and the occupation army in the Palestinian territories, and this was one of the reasons that caused the Operation Al-Aqsa flood to break out.
The construction of Israeli settlements in the Palestinian territories and in occupied Jerusalem al-Quds is an illegal, illegitimate act and condemnable. Under no circumstances can the permanence of these settlements be supported, since they do not agree with the norms of international law in general. The only solution is to put an end to these settlements.
According to Palestinian sources, this Israeli war has been one of the most brutal in history, which has caused the destruction of more than 70% of the structures in the Gaza Strip. Given this, the Israeli minister, Itamar Ben-Gvir, assured that the massacre in Gaza is an opportunity to develop a project that will encourage Gazan residents to immigrate to other countries in the world. This is in addition to the solution proposed by the Minister of Finance, Bezalel Smotrich, which encourages the voluntary immigration of the citizens of Gaza and in fact depopulate the area of Palestinians.
They're trying to bomb all the places, displace people by force. They say that this is a voluntary displacement, but in reality, it is not. The displacement is due to the crimes of the occupation, the deliberate and systematic bombing of civilians. They even bomb areas where the displaced people live. This is a forced displacement of citizens under armed pressure, including planes and tanks, as well as a psychological and media impact with a war waged against the Palestinian people.
The reports released by the UN indicate a very significant increase in violent incursions by Israeli settlers in the West Bank cities since October 7th. This has caused the death of a record number of Palestinians. This is also considered an integral part of the Zionist plan that seeks to completely dispossess Palestinians of their land.
The attack on Palestinian citizens in the cities of the West Bank, Jerusalem, Al-Quds, or even inside occupied Palestine is considered a crime in every sense. This is a political cost for Netanyahu's cabinet, along with Ben-Gvir and Smotrich. They have decided to give the settlers the green light to do whatever they want with the objectives of invading and the Judaization that the settlers are carrying out, including the raids on the Al-Aqsa Mosque. This is actually one of the reasons that led to the outbreak of the Operation Al-Aqsa Flood. Therefore, the cost for the cabinet of Netanyahu, who is now appeasing the settlers after giving them the green light, is very high.
There are a large number of Gazans who have decided to stay in their homes and not go out despite the great danger to their lives. However, they have decided to resist and not allow a second Nakba to take place. This is another act of resistance by the Palestinian population. It is to continue showing the world the crimes committed by the Israeli regime. A large number of journalists and media workers have been murdered for the simple fact of being eyes of the truth and reporting Israel's actions.
The way to confront this occupation is to stay alive and rebuild any place that is being destroyed. Today, every Palestinian citizen who has a mobile phone is now able to broadcast through social media and expose this occupation by spreading the truth about everything. The painful truth is that in the past month, we've seen that journalists are being attacked because they wanted to show the true image of the occupation. They've also become a target for exposing the crimes of the occupation in front of the Arab and international community.
Despite the constant crimes committed by the Israeli regime in Gaza and other Palestinian territories, the world continues to fold its arms and do nothing to stop this massacre. For 75 years, Palestinians have lived under Israeli occupation. During all these decades, it has been carrying out the most atrocious crimes against the Palestinian population. Now, again in the 21st century, and in the face of silence from the international community, the Zionists seek to expel the Gazans from their territories to take control of the rest of Palestine. Huda Hejazi, Gaza, Palestine.
Los habitantes actuales de la Franja de Gaza.
The current inhabitants of the Gaza Strip, depending on their age, have been forcibly displaced between 1 and 3 times over the last 75 years. It all began in 1897 at the first Zionist Congress in Basel, Switzerland, when Theodor Herzl presented to a tiny part of the world Jewry their project to rebuild the regime of Israel from the Nile to Euphrates, the founding myth of being part of the chosen people and this being the promised land. We thank our correspondent in Gaza, Huda Hejazi, and I invite you to stay tuned because in the next section we will be talking with a very special guest.
Estaremos conversando con una invitada muy especial.
Well, we are back, and in this section we are going to talk with Silvana Rabinovich, who is a researcher at the Philological Research Institute of the National Autonomous University of Mexico.
Gracias, Silvana, por haber aceptado esta invitación.
Thank you, Silvana, for accepting this welcome invitation. I want to ask you a question that many are asking in the current context with this ongoing genocide. At what point in this historical development of the Zionist project are we, and how far do they intend to go?
Well, first of all, I really appreciate the invitation. I'm very honored. Well, I want to mention points about the colonial and national colonial political theology of Israel. I think that from that point of view, we've reached the moment when the last apocalyptic mooring is loose. And when we talk about the Zionist project, I think we have to also take into account Christian Zionism, which is very interested in this apocalypse for the second coming of Christ. And well, I believe that there is no return to this. There was already genocide in progress there, but now we're witness to an accelerated genocide. It's been unleashed. And I'm surprised by the reception it has among the Israeli population, even those that claim to be progressive, and even among former conscientious objectors who today have decided, at age 40 and a half, for example, to enroll in this massacre, this genocide. That is extremely worrying because it's an attitude that was growing and deepening. And in this case, there really was no difference between the different administrations in Israel, whether those assumed to be left-wing, which can be discussed, or those on the right regarding the settlements. We're, of course, focused on Gaza, which is something atrocious, and it is difficult to understand why the entire world does not rise up against the genocide there. Well, some governments around the world, or rather nations, have taken actions. In other words, the siege that surprised the Israelis on October 7th is being constantly documented. That, of course, it is very scary that they will take you out of bed and arrest you. But it happens. As Haggai Matar, the director of Plus 92 magazine, said, it happens every day there. Just one letter signed by 669 Israelis in support of South Africa's claim before the International Court of Justice is all that was achieved from the entire population, considering even those who did not vote for this administration, those who took to the streets to protest against Netanyahu. That really catches my attention. They hid themselves under the cloak of what that assures them of collective suicide with what they consider the enemy.
After the first Zionist Congress in 1897, there was talk of Israel from the Nile to the Euphrates. In 1948, they accepted, of course, the partition of Palestine, but declared that it was a first step. Then in 1967, in the misnamed Six-Day War, they occupied the entire Palestinian territory and some areas of the Syrian Golan Heights and Lebanon, in where the Zionist project is going.
¿Dónde para el proyecto sionista?
Let's see, the Zionist project. It goes back a little bit to history, because from the first Zionist Congress to the ones that followed, there was a lot of discussion there. And there were voices that did not agree at all with this form of foreign colonialism in the region and typically European version, nor with the fact of considering the original inhabitants of the land as enemies. I mean, in 2006, I translated Martin Buber's political text, and there was a whole movement, a movement that was against it. Let's see, in 1946, when the Anglo-American Commission went to Palestine to see if the land was actually divided or not, which was carried out on November the 29th, 1947, they disobeyed the leadership of the Jewish population of Palestine, Martin Buber, Yehuda Magnus, and Moshe Slimansky. They all arrived and convinced the Anglo-American Commission that the land should not be divided, that there should be neither one nor two national states, but a confederation of autonomous communities from the part of Greater Syria. So within the Zionist movements, there were also these positions which were all the time denouncing the demographic and expansionist ideas as deeply contradictory with the love of the land, with the possibilities of coexistence that existed. However, well, we see now that not a bit of that remains. That was present until 1948. And all the years that Martin Buber was still alive, Martin Buber continued fighting to protect, to protest the properties, the rights of the Palestinian population. Of course, he died in 1965. He no longer saw 1967. He did not see all that expansionist fever, absolutely foreign to the culture of the region. I would also like to point to the time of the secularization of the Hebrew language. Yehuda proposed and practiced this secularization of the language, which was much discussed due to the connotations it later had, which we are seeing now in its worst moment and in its worst version. He said that the words that had to be completed from so many countries, that the Hebrew language had to be confined to the ritual religious sphere, had to be completed from Arabic, which was the closest language, the most sisterly, and the one of the place. But well, the Zionist leadership is doubly Eurocentric. It is Eurocentric in Central Europe, and it used the Jews of Arab countries as human shields to carry out this project, which, as Theodor Herzl, the founder of Zionism, said, had to have its function be the retaining wall that prevents Eastern barbarism from entering Europe. And well, this is what we're seeing now, and it is in its worst phase, of course.
Y está en su peor fase, por supuesto.
Gracias, Silvana.
Thank you, Silvana. Now I'm going to give way to the audience. They have two questions they want to ask you. Please.
Por favor.
Hola, mi nombre es Janigeria.
Hello, my name is Jangeria. I am a philosophy professor, also of Palestinian descent in Chile. I wanted to ask you the following question. I wanted to know what you think about the biblical names that the Israelis use for both the use of weapons and also the military campaigns that they carry out, precisely in a land that we know has that connotation.
Gracias, Hani. Eso es justamente el tema que yo más trabajo.
Thanks. That is precisely the topic that I work on the most. I mean, the abusive ways in which the biblical text and biblical figures are used to name these campaigns weapons. And well, it has a purpose that Netanyahu recently reminded us of when he spoke of Amalek, which is that people who must be exterminated according to God for having abused the weakest at the exit from Egypt. Something that one says now. Well, the one who is playing the role of Amalek is the Netanyahu administration and not the people of Gaza whom he's trying to annihilate. This happens in Rafael Industries. What's happening? From the name Rafael, since it is actually an acronym to each of the names of the campaign. I've detailed this in my book, The Drone Bible, about such abuses and the abuses of biblical figures in Israel's political discourse. I believe that in the Bible, there are two sources. One is monarchical and the other one is prophetic. The prophetic sets limit to the monarchic. Obviously, the one that prevails is the monarchic in a European sovereignist version. And what it seems to me is that the Bible is needed precisely to evoke the limiting forces that the prophetic sources set.
The limit que ponía la fuente profética.
Hola.
Hello, my name is Carmen Mendoza. I am an international journalist, and I would like to know who are the settlers, where do they come from, and what role have they played and are playing in the occupation of Palestine?
Gracias por la pregunta, Carmen. A ver, los colonos.
Thanks for the question, Carmen. Let's see. The settlers, many of them, are Zionist immigrants, very convinced of this expansionist vision that Daniel described at the beginning. They tend to come from the United States and France and also other places. There are, of course, Israelis born there, of course, but it is striking how there are people who have immigrated to occupy the land, to radically carry out this ethnic cleansing to the point of genocide, and which is also manifested in the siege. There are Israeli organizations that seek to protect the settlers, especially Area C. But the truth is that Area A, similar to Area B and Area C, are constantly besieged by the army. On June the 8th, 50 armored cars poured into Ramallah just to destroy the apartment of someone who was there in jail in Israel in Area A. So this form of presence is what they call showing presence. It makes the settlers feel completely free to commit all kinds of crimes. Even the last administration has greatly encouraged them to be armed with heavy weapons. Even teenagers who go to school armed with heavy weapons. So let's say there is a debasement, a civil debasement at the beginning. Now, deepening of this debasement is enormous, and they are very convinced, settlers and young people. I went to the Jordan Valley accompanying a group of Israeli retirees who defend the shepherds so that they can graze. What happened was that two young boys of about 16 years old went down with their cows to destroy the wheat fields with their tiny tractors to scare the sheep. In other words, there is a siege. There is a constant siege, and there are, of course, young people born there, but also very right-wing, as well as convinced Zionists who emigrate to precisely what they call badly, very badly, Judaize the land. This is what we see in the Jerusalem area, the Greater Jerusalem Project, right? But we shouldn't also forget about what's happening in the worst of the lowest in Hebron, which is Al-Khalil.
Muchas gracias, Silvana.
Thank you very much, Silvana, for accepting our invitation. What you say is absolutely true. Here in Chile, there is a Hebrew Institute that in one of its last years makes study trips to the occupied territories, and there they do a course of almost a week called Gatna, where they teach Chilean citizens how to use weapons wearing Israeli army uniform. And that, incredibly, is legal. I thank you very much for your participation, and let's take a break.
Y vamos a una pausa, ya regresamos.
Dear listeners, that was the first part of A Window to Palestine. You can listen to the second part tomorrow.
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints.
It guides us through life. It has taught us everything. We should learn and appreciate what it gives us. And try to apply them to our daily lives. How is it possible?
از راه قرآن.
By means of Quran.
این خوندن قرآن و تلاوت قرآن قدم اول است برادران من. این قدم آخر نیست.
Reading and recitation of the Quran is the first step, brothers, not the last one.
هو الذي أرسل رسوله بالهدى ودين.
It is he who has sent his apostle with the guidance and the religion of truth, that he may make it prevail over all religions, though the polytheists should be averse.
والذي أرسل رسوله بالهدى ودين الحق ليظهره على الدين كله ولو كره المشركون.
تلاوت قرآن با صوت خوش، با آداب که شیوه خاصی دارد، موسیقی خاصی دارد، روش خاصی دارد، اینها چیزایی لازم است.
Recitation of the Quran in nice tones should be performed according to particular methods and tones.
اما این کافی نیست.
But it's not enough.
نقیم الدین ولا تتفرقوا فیه.
مشکل بزرگ مسلمانان دنیا دوری از قرآن. دوری از قرآن. از قرآن.
Muslims' major problem is losing touch with the Quran. Quran. Quran.
کتاب الله.
This is this for is, a better life. For a better life.
فرمود بعثتُ لأتمم مكارم الأخلاق.
The Holy Prophet of Islam says, "I have been sent to complete noble manners."
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. This is for a better life from IRB English Radio. I am your host, Sayyid Mahdi Tawakkol. This discussion is related to Islamic lifestyle and is based on the Quran and Islamic narrations and help you to enjoy better life. In our today's discussion, I want to talk about a very common but mostly neglected point in our life, which is death. As an introduction to this title, I have to say that sometimes there are problems in our life that we call it cognitive obstacles. These obstacles are like a cover over intellect that does not allow the human intellect to work properly, does not let the mind to recognize the things as they are. There are many verses of the Holy Quran that allude to this point, but unfortunately, since we are not that much familiar with the verses of the Quran, we mostly neglect them. And inshallah, in the following of this program, I refer to some of these verses. These problems do not allow the human intellect to work properly. However, one of these obstacles that mentioned by scholars and also can be seen in the verses of the Quran is self-love. We mankind, since we love ourselves, this is a great barrier that does not let us to understand some of the facts that exist in our life, one of which is death. Because when we love ourselves, we usually prefer not to think about the time that we no longer are alive. We always think that this life will be continued and continued. But it does not change the truth that death really exists. The point here is that no matter how clear and bright the face of the truth is, it is impossible to understand it up until two things simultaneously exist next to each other. One of them is that the thing, for example the truth, be in front of our eye clearly, that if someone wants to see it, be able to see it. And the second thing is that we have the tool and instrument of seeing it, which is our eyes. The same thing is applicable to hearing. I mean, something to be heard should exist, and also the tool of hearing should be next to it. It should also be available. But when the hearing and seeing sense of our mind does not work properly, we cannot hear the things, we cannot look at the truth that exists everywhere. Just like a blind person could not see the sun, or just a person who is deaf cannot hear the lovely signs of the world. If we want to uncover these obstacles, that is, on our intellect, one of the ways is that we work on our soul to be self-disciplined and to practice piety. This removes this curtain in front of our eyes and helps us understand and see the truth. Without piety, without chastity, without self-discipline, and without working hard on the path of God, we will be trapped into darkness, we will be trapped into delusion, and will wander in the wrong way. And because of this, we see that the Quran says, ذَلَكَ الْكِتَابُ لَا رَيْبَ فِيهِ هُدًى لِلْمُتَّقِينَ. In this book, there is no doubt, but it is a guidance just for the pious people. It means the pious could benefit from the verses of the Quran. If man is not pious, his intellect could not see the truth and see the reality that exists in the verses of the Quran. If a man does not train his soul, the result would be something that God says in the Quran, لَهُمْ أَعْيُنٌ لَا يُبْصِرُونَ بِهَا وَلَهُمْ آذَانٌ لَا يَسْمَعُونَ بِهَا. For these people, there are eyes, but they could not see, and there are ears, but could not use it and hear the things. Therefore, when I at the beginning talked about self-love, means when we mankind love ourselves, do not pay attention to the things that is in contrary to this self-love. Because of this, we usually want to distance ourselves from thinking that some bad events could happen to us. For example, when they hear that a flood has occurred in a certain area or a car has fallen into a valley, we do not think that the same events could happen to us as well. We think that we are accepted. Let's go for a short break. I am Sayyid Mahdi Tawakkol, and leave with me for the rest of my talk. I was talking about the cognition obstacle that does not let the mind work properly. And one of these obstacles is due to self-love that distances us from understanding the realities. One of these realities is death. We think that it just happened to other people and not to us. It is for this reason that we hear from the Prophet, peace be upon him and his progeny, that he says in a noble tradition, كَأَنَّ الْمَوْتِ فِيهَا عَلَىٰ غَيْرَنَا كُتِبْ, as if death is written on others and not to us. وَكَأَنَّ الْحَقَّ عَلَىٰ غَيْرَنَا وَجَبْ, and as if it is obligatory on others, and this truth is only applicable to others and not to us. If we think more properly, can we see that there is any other fact to be more true than death in our life? But why we are neglectful of this truth? Who has guaranteed that he will live for another moment? If there is no guarantee, then why do we delay all these good things? Why we leave repentance to tomorrow and postpone it to other days? If there is a good thing that we can do, we have to do it as soon as possible. Maybe death prevents us from having the fortune to do it. If we look at the behavior of some people, it is totally amazing. How many ugly and painful events they commit in their life that has no other meaning but to show that they completely dismiss this fact, I mean the death in their life. There are many realities in our life that we should not dismiss them. We should not remain unaware of them. One of these facts is that our distance with death could be totally short. There is a famous quote from a nobleman who says, when a person announces the death of someone, suddenly his own death will be announced by others. This is a fact that has been repeated so many times in our life, but we still do not pay enough attention to it. For example, in many occasions and many times, we hear that some people say that God had mercy on us. We were driving by car and unfortunately we were close to falling into a special valley, or that the car passed by me with a high speed, but fortunately, it didn't hit me. This so-called fortunately, luckily, could happen so many times in life, but how long? Ultimately, one of these events leads to death, and it is inevitable. The conclusion is that there are many lessons that should be learned, but man only takes lesson from it if his mind and his intellect work properly, if he removes the curtain and the cover that exists in front of his mind. There is nothing closer to man than death, and at the same time, we forget this important truth. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Every grain of sand in every desert land, he knows. Every shade of palm, every closed hand, he knows.
voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
نتالی رابی رانز